Welcome to episode 374 of Coffee Pods and Wads. If you go to lskd.co and use CPW LSKD, you can get a discount, and they've got a new range of these kind of light, athleisure t-shirts. Like, they're perfect for running and stuff. So you can go to lskd.co and use CPW LSKD. You should join Sentinel. They have had a huge influx of new members after Tater Self versus the World. And they're all sticking around because they've seen how good the programming is. If you go to get.fitter.training/Sentinel, you can join that. Join.whoop.com/CPW will get you a free Whoop strap and a discount on your first month's membership. And it gives me a bit of money as well, which is just great. If you're on the island of Ireland and you want to service your fitness equipment or buy some new fitness equipment, you should go to D8 Fitness. They visit gyms, affiliates around the country and spruce up the stuff that they currently have, and they offer them some new stuff too. Frog grips are the best grips, and I also just found out that they make jiggers, the little things that go on your crocs. So if you go to froggrips.com, you can get some knee sleeves, some sweatbands, some grips, any kind of stuff like that. BTWB, Beyond the Whiteboard, if you go to btwb.com, you can register and you can use it as your own personal app for tracking your workouts, and it keeps track of how many reps you do of stuff over the course of the year. So if I had sense, I would have been putting in my burpees all year, and it would have told me at the end of exactly how many I did, but I didn't do that. So that's just great that I forgot to do that, but you can do it. So it'll count your kilos moved, it'll count your, you know, calories completed, your double unders completed, burpees, whatever. And it does it automatically. You don't have to tell it to do it. And if you go to GoWad, you can avail of their free trial. And you can use that to do your mobility test. And then off the back of that, it will personalize the protocols for you on what you need to improve on. You can get that in the App Store or the Play Store. Today's guest is Max El-Haj. He is the head honcho over at Training Think Tank. We chat about changes he's seen in himself over the years and changes he's seen in Training Think Tank and what he thinks is going to happen over the next few years.
Oh, what are you drinking there? Pineapple something.
Poppy. Strawberry lemon prebiotic soda. Although Jake Berman has a soda, I should probably be drinking his and giving him some product placement.
What's it called? Spade.
Yeah, Spade.
Yeah. That guy must be rich as fuck.
I don't know, man.
He'd just be like, I'm just gonna start a soda company. He's got that soda company money. So thank you for taking a break from the Corpus Anus podcast. to go on
this. That's how it's pronounced in Middle America. We don't teach people to read good out here.
Yeah, there you go.
Corpus Anus. First comment right there. Corpus Anus, yeah. Podcast.
Perfect. this has been a long time coming from my side. You're probably like, what? But I think I asked you to come on the show like maybe like 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and you were like, cool, yeah, bit busy at the minute, I'll get back to you. It's just like nothing until we bumped into each other in Madison, and you were like, have we talked before? Have I been on your show? And I didn't have the heart, I didn't have the balls to say, no, you ghosted me for 2 years.
I fucked you over, yeah. But I thought it was in Madison. We were supposed to do, or maybe that was a follow-up to when you...
That was another, yeah. We were supposed to go to Madison, and then... yeah, you were just a dick. No, you were busy. It's a busy period of time.
a busy dick.
Yeah. It's interesting. Following you online, I don't know if you're aware of this. Maybe you'll correct me, but following you online, the last... I'd say 8 months, you seem like you've got a different kind of energy about you in the last 8 months than you had for like 2-3 years previous to that, from my perspective anyway, where you're a lot more kind of lighthearted, like jovial, bubbly, compared to you were quite, there were flashes of it, but like I would have described you as like serious before that. Yeah. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think it's accurate. I think intense would probably be, a better word, or maybe the shift away from intensity over time into a more balanced and joyful state. I feel like I've done a lot of work mentally, and then the business stuff has kind of gone well. And I think it's just been a slow evolution, and you probably like, you see it in the last 8 months, and it's maybe drastic, but it was really this like kind of just slow gradual change. And I think my like personal operating system, like how I just navigate coaching, sport, business development, my own personal stuff, I think I've just started to like gain stride in that process.
Have you read all those books behind you?
Yeah, I have.
How often do you read? Do you read like, are you like, I'm going to go to bed, I'm going to read before I go to sleep? Or do you like sit down a dedicated time to read?
Oh man, I've been through phases. I'm not like I feel like some of the online gurus are like, this is my routine and this is how I am all the time. I'm very scattered and very messy. And there are times where I'll read 3 books in a 1 week period and just be kind of like manic. And then there'll be periods of time where I'm creating more and I'm less, intellectual, or I might be creating coursework where I'm then focused on writing and processing my thoughts. But I'd say, in like, if I had to average it out throughout the year, I probably will read like a book a month, like consistently. But when I was young, I was very nerdy. So because I was educated in finance, but operating in the fitness space, I think I had this like insecurity to digest all of this information to prove that I was academic. So I studied science and biomechanics and all of this stuff to prove I was worthy. And I was reading like a book a week, and I was like very, very intellectual. And I think over time, I've probably gotten more dumb.
Yeah. God, we're like, we're on such an opposite trajectory. yeah, I think I kind of avoid reading. I think I kind of avoid reading because I know I'm dumb. So then, yeah, like then I have an excuse of like, well, look, I mean, I don't really read. What do you expect? Someone's talking to me, just like, what are we expecting going into this conversation? I don't read. I barely read the comments. Well, another thing that I wanted to say to you, this isn't intended as an argument starter, but I remember another engagement that we had, or another interaction that we had. I can't remember what the article was about. It was something to do with coaching or training camps or something. I can't remember, but I wrote an article anyway. And I asked a range of coaches for anonymous quotes if they wanted to be anonymous, or I could name them if they wanted to be named. And you gave a quote and you were like, I don't know, like, no, not sure, like, attributed to me, don't, I'm not sure, whatever. And I was like, well, you're not saying anything that other people haven't said, and they're all happy to be named. And you're like, yeah, okay, fine, you can name whatever. And then you said, I sent you the article to read back over it, like, to be like, are you happy with this? Yeah. And you replied, you were like, yeah, I'm happy with that. Maybe get someone that can write to read over your article before you publish it. I was just like, what the fuck? And that was my only prior interaction with you before we met in Madison. And I remember talking to, I think I said it, I might have said it to Travis maybe. I was like, what's Max like? And he was like, oh yeah, like, good guy, why? And I was like, I don't know, like, was this a joke, or was he being genuine, or what the fuck? But it'll live long in a memory of like, that was a hilarious interaction.
Was that I feel like I want to go back now through, was it on Instagram that we were having that conversation?
Yeah, it was, I'm pretty sure it was in DMs, but it was, yeah, it was very funny. it was, because you said it, you sent,
sorry.
Sorry, because it was very funny. Like, I remember reading back over it and I was just like, what did he mean? I was like, did he mean, I'm trying to find it out, but I was like, did he mean that to sound the way it sounded? You know, like, I was reading back over it like 4 or 5 times being like, oh, this has to be wrong. I'm never gonna find it.
And if that conversation was a couple years ago, I was probably more direct, especially if you asked Travis. That was probably how our whole coaching relationship started.
Yeah, it might have been an email, because I see the messages about the article.
But I don't see, it might have been an email, yeah. But anyway, it was very funny, and I was just like, what? And then I was like, he probably just sent it. With all the stuff like that, I always assume like someone could be having a bad day, someone could be whatever, someone could be whatever. And with that one, I was just like, must be a joke, like, because it's so blunt that it must be a joke. But either way, I took it as a joke and found it hilarious either way. But yeah, with that kind of stuff, like when I asked you that, and I've asked you, like I've asked you on the show a few times, and you've been kind of reluctant. And I know from following you on social media and stuff, you're a sharer, but like I would say a reluctant sharer, maybe. Do you see yourself as like an expert? Like, are you an expert in your field, do you think?
Hmm. Can I look? I'm going to look up what the definition of expert is. Because that's a tough question. I feel like it's a little bit loaded. Expert, a person who has a comprehensive and authoritative. Damn, I clicked on the wrong thing. Expert.
There you go. Person who is very knowledgeable about or skillful in a particular area, having or involving a great deal of knowledge or skill, or you can have a computer chip in your head.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I definitely have a computer chip in my head. No, man. I feel almost boisterous saying it. I think I try to do a good job of keeping myself humble, so I keep getting better. But according to that definition, I do think I'm pretty knowledgeable in training, biomechanics, CrossFit, the sport of CrossFit, general physical training. I've done it and educated people in it for a decade or more than a decade and a half, and have proven it with multiple athletes, my own body, other coaches, and mentoring them to have had a lot of success in the space. So yeah, I would say that I feel pretty knowledgeable and skillful, but I don't know if I want to self-proclaim that word necessarily, even though I just said yes and justified it based on the definition. So I don't know where that leaves me.
I'll attribute it to you. I'll call you an expert, and then I'll change the name of the show, Expert Coach. you've started doing, or you're kind of finishing up like coaching resources. Is that right? Like strength resources.
Yeah. So I've done educational stuff for a long time, and we've kind of experimented with different types of mentorship work and different types of education and what types of coaches we want to educate, because there's a broad ranging in the CrossFit space. You know, there's people that just like do a couple classes a week, and they're coaching people that are just like general trainees that don't maybe need a lot of nuanced specificity. And then there's people that are like running gyms that coach pro CrossFitters and athletes in other sports. And so finding that kind of niche has been hard, and finding the time to do it well has been challenging. So we kind of remodeled how we want to educate and started putting out courses. We started with movement and then strength, and we're working on a conditioning course right now. And then we have other courses kind of mapped out as part of this like longer term educational process of building coaches and really just upgrading knowledge in the space, just in general. It's kind of been one of the missions of Training Think Tub.
Nice. So who are you targeting with that course? Like, are you looking at someone who's just done their level one and is looking to get into coaching? Or are you looking for someone who's got like 3 or 4 years under their belt, is like, all right, I need to kind of like, you know, sharpen the tip of my spear kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think we built it in a way knowing that we have a lot of visibility in the CrossFit space, and there are a lot of people that get in and they're just kind of level one. And it's like, okay, now this is this whole new process of getting into coaching. So we built it knowing that it could start as a framework for that kind of more entry-level person to build into. But we built it more for people that are doing like individual training, want to work with athletes, want to start to refine, like, okay, well, if you're going to do a movement screen on somebody and you want to help them actually get better, how do you do that? How do you go through the process? What movements do you look at? What are the implications of the movements that you're seeing? And how do you change those things over time? So I think by nature, I'm hoping to build a educational system for people who want to be professional coaches. Because I think there's a difference in, I have a job and then I'm coaching in the side in this thing that I'm passionate about because I like doing it. And I want to make a living doing this thing of helping people, whether they're athletes or general class things. And I think there's so much knowledge that can be helpful and so much practical information that can be helpful if you're trying to be a professional in the industry, where some of the, like, hey, keep it simple, stupid, and package it in a way that the mass consumer can understand it. That's great to get people into it, but it's also very hard to then take that person and say, okay, well, now make a living that's comparable to other places in the world other places in the market. Like, all right, make a living that's equivalent to being a lawyer or a doctor. I think that standard of quality needs to be much higher if you hope to do coaching as a profession.
Yeah. I guess the easy thing I'm a teacher, so the easy thing for me is to match my current income would be such a piece of piss that, like, it'd be so easy. Because it's such, when you talk about, like, oh, you need to match a doctor, it's like, that's not happening for me, but God, I could match my own salary pretty easily. Would you say then that the training think tank method, or your method of coaching, is it CrossFit, or has it, like, are you kind of building out from CrossFit into different, like, are you going towards, like, you know, like strength and conditioning coaching versus like core pure essential CrossFit, if you understand what I mean?
Yeah, well, you know, that's all a very difficult question, because what the definition of CrossFit is very ambiguous in some ways. Like, the constantly varied functional movements performed at high intensity as one model, the hopper model as another model, and the, like, kind of energy system pathways as another model. They give you a good, like, general framework of, like, okay, well, we're training for everything. And I'd say that if that's the definition, then yes, it is kind of CrossFit, but then so is all of strength and conditioning, because strength and conditioning has been maybe not so much the hopper thing as much, but the variation in movement patterns is something that's pretty common in like the biomechanics field and teaching people complex motor tasks. So I feel like a lot of what CrossFit is was Greg Glassman in the early days going out into all of these sub-disciplines, pulling them in and saying, hey, now the end goal isn't to become a gymnast. It is to use gymnastics in this holistic way of developing fitness. So in that realm, I'd say that it's very CrossFit influence, because I grew up in this space and CrossFit changed my paradigm when I was young. At first, I got into this from strength and conditioning. Like, I was doing speed training for athletes and working with MMA people and doing my own training and hiring these people in these spaces and learning in academia. And then CrossFit came in and was like, bam, and challenged this idea of, like, hey, that's like a stupid way of looking at it. And I was brought into that. Like, I really enjoyed that kind of counterculture way of putting function over the aesthetic bullshit that was driving a lot of people crazy, really, in the fitness industry. So then I studied so much how to get people better in this space that I think that anything I do from here on out will have been influenced by all of what CrossFit did. But I say that I would have a more systematic way of trying to evaluate fitness according to their definitions, measure it on a regular basis. I think there are contentions I have about even little things. Like, there's a huge contradiction in calling something constantly varied from a movement pattern perspective, and then having 9 core movements, and probably in, like, the sport and general prescriptive training, there's probably like 30 movements that are always in CrossFit programs. Whereas if you're playing a sport, like you're playing pickleball or you're playing basketball, the movement capacity that you have is like millions of different patterns. Your center of gravity is in different areas, your rotation. So a lot of people say I'm doing constantly varied movement, but they're not really doing constantly varied movement. They're doing like a structured level of variance. So I don't know if that was a really roundabout way of talking about your question and saying, like, I don't really know, because I don't really know what CrossFit is outside of, like, these little conceptual metaphorical frameworks that say, okay, well, this is CrossFit. And I would say that some people in CrossFit would look at what I do and be like, no, he doesn't do CrossFit. And other people would be like, yes, that's, he's exactly explaining CrossFit. It's just an ambiguous concept, I feel like, to me. Maybe
Frustrated with, like, do you get frustrated with CrossFit? Do you get does the how can I describe it? Does your perceived lack of specificity within CrossFit frustrate you when you've described yourself as analytical and someone who puts careful consideration into word choice, I guess, and who has educated yourself and stuff in, you know, lexicons, basically?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe definitely when I was younger, there's been a lot of things that, like, you know, how the sport was run, or when in the very, very early days, I worked for James Fitzgerald, who was part of OPT, who was kind of excommunicated from CrossFit. And at the time, we were doing a lot of research on CrossFit and CrossFit athletes. And we were seeing people with very unhealthy blood panels if they were going too far and doing too much. And so people with like pretty serious joint deterioration. And these things that I thought were like, hey, I'm not saying let's not do this anymore. I'm not saying that this is unhealthy, but maybe some of this information could be considered in how we educate people how to do this. And I feel like there wasn't a lot of ability to dissent in and challenge opinion and have best practices. It was kind of like a culture of you're with us or you're an enemy, or if you're thinking critically about it and it doesn't align with how we say it, then you're wrong and we're right. And enforcement of standards. But I think over the years, you kind of alluded to it. I have stopped trying to be frustrated and controlling of how people should do things and just focus on like, well, hey, this is how I want to coach people and how I want to help and how I want to contribute. And I'm this cog in the CrossFit community. And maybe over time, I'll have my own subsidiary community within that ecosystem. And now I don't think I would have frustrations with it, but it definitely, there are things that I'm not in alignment with that CrossFit is. But that's probably true of everybody that participates in it. It's just that I have like a public platform where maybe I've put more of it out there and said it out loud, but talking to people in the space, I feel like there's a lot of that. I'm not like an anomaly in that, I don't think.
Is that, are you talking about that from a elite athlete coach perspective or just a general participant in CrossFit perspective?
I think both. Yeah, I think both.
Yeah. It's interesting.
I mean, I have been in like, I am seen as an elite CrossFit coach, but I actually I've worked literally in an affiliate. I've done personal training with general people. I've coached classes. Travis runs a gym inside of our space. So I see how that is. And we've programmed for them and we've seen what the issues are, right? Like an athlete that wants to compete in sport. If I say, hey, this stuff is boring, but you need to do it because it's going to save you from getting injured or it's going to allow you to express power at a higher level. A high level athlete might put up with that boredom and that bullshit and the monotony of doing the same thing for like this little body positional change. If you try to do that same thing with somebody who's just there for a good time, who's sweating and working out just for general health, you don't get buy-in. And if you don't get buy-in, then you don't get results the same way. So the coaching model is still the same, but the way that you put it into a training program and communicate it to people and how you triage, well, this is what's most important for this person is maybe just a little bit different. But I'd say it's from both realms, like both the elite and the just general class member wanting to be healthy.
Is it hard to balance the two, like Travis's affiliate and the like, is it in the same room, if you know what I mean? Are they separate places or the same place?
Yeah, same place. It's not been hard. We've worked on over time creating better processes, but we are in the process of trying to create a uniform structure with more clear guidelines and more cohesion. But generally speaking, right now, it's just like there are times set up where it's for the classes and we have a smaller area that our people can do open gym. And then when the classes are over, we take over the whole gym, and we kind of just operate on a schedule that's synergistic for his people that are on class schedule hours and our people that are more on like pro athlete hours.
God, fucking amazing use of synergistic. So this is like the education page, right?
Yeah. Hold on. What do you teach?
Like everything, like elementary school. So like we just teach, we teach all the subjects. So we teach, the class has one teacher for the year. Oh, they don't move around and stuff. I know what it's like there.
No, they have that.
Yeah.
That's our YouTube educational page.
Yeah, yeah. So if people want to get videos, they can go there.
Yeah, we just launched that a little while ago. So we've had 5 videos in a month go up. We're trying to target like one a week for, and we tie it to our blog. So each one of these has like a blog.
Sorry.
No, you're all good, man.
That wasn't supposed to be.
Commenting on this as we're talking?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Shit. Holy shit, you got a bunch of them.
Someone wants to know about your chair. Can we get a link to Max's chair?
What is it?
Can we get a link to your chair? They like your chair that you're sitting in.
Oh, I got it at an antique shop. So there's probably, it's probably not on Amazon. It's probably got dead mice in it from the earlier mid 1900s.
Probably got a beehive. No, I don't teach the third grade. I actually think I do. What age are third graders in America?
They're like 8, I think. 8, 5, 7, 8.
Fuck, I do teach the third grade. So you started off with what became OPEX then. And so is that like, obviously you don't want to be excommunicated, I'm guessing, but is that your aim with think tanks educational stuff then? Is that it would be a similar niche or a similar like a new kind of iteration of that, like something within CrossFit but separate to CrossFit, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know what you mean. Help me understand. Like,
as in, like
anybody, like WOD, would that be what WOD prep, who does courses on muscle ups, for example, would that be the same type of model as well?
Yeah, where I guess. Yeah, like something kind of within it, but separate to it, if you know what I mean. And I guess as well, it kind of there is the danger of like you talk about being critical, not critical, but critiquing things and like, you know, thinking about things and talking about things. And there is, or there have been, like Fitzgerald is probably a good example of that, who was like cut out because it was just like, hey man, fuck you. Like, you said too much negative shit. Like, so bye. Like, when you're doing something like you're doing with Think Tank and you're not, say, like just doing CrossFit, if you know what I mean. Is that a thought that you have or a fear that you have of like, oh shit, like what if the same thing happens? Like what if I'm getting like too big for my boots and it's like I'm gonna be cut out because I say something or because I'm seen as not like toeing the line kind of thing?
I don't worry about that. I feel like if somebody's bringing knowledge to the space and helping affiliate owners do their job better, that it's better for the whole ecosystem. But I don't know, maybe it's possible that, I mean, I say things that, and I don't think I've been super negative about CrossFit. I just think I wouldn't be, like, for example, I saw this little clip, you know how Instagram has these little clips pulled out of podcasts, and it was James Hobart saying that he's never seen CrossFit not work. And maybe that's a true reflection of all of the experience that he's had in the space, but I have, you know, and it doesn't mean that CrossFit doesn't work or that CrossFit is bad, but I think that there's a way to look back in context and say, okay, well, who is intensity best for, or is this the best form of strength training for this demographic of person? Or if this person is experiencing this and they're doing general classes, are they potentially undermining their own health, even though they're doing something that is supposed to be healthy for them? So I think what I try to do is provide nuance and context and experience. And I'm sure if CrossFit asked me to do that and said, hey, come in and restructure our education, I would entertain doing that, but that's not my place, I don't think. You know, and I don't think that we would be in alignment. Like, there's a lot of things about the level one that I think have been taught for a really long time that I feel like are outdated and should be pulled out. But I've had conversations with people in HQ that don't think that. So it's kind of just like, all right, well, it is what it is. I think a good community can agree to disagree on issues. And if somebody teaches it this way and another person teaches it this way might be good for some people. This way might be good for other people. But the net effect of that is more people are trying to do it in a better way that suits them and gets them better. So I'm operating more from a creative, hey, I want to educate based on what I know and what I think, and not on a like competitive or mimicking what other people are done. We just have more coaches, we have growth. And I'm like, what are the things that I want to teach young coaches that are up and coming that are going to be working with athletes, or maybe they're working with CrossFitters, but maybe takes in the initial educational model, it's taking a more one-on-one approach. And then our kind of next iteration of that is, okay, now you understand all the program design principles. How do you take these things and apply them into a class type setting where you're going to be creating scaling options and instead of being able to write an individual structure around it. But that's just, I think, I don't know. That's how I would think about it.
What kind of stuff in the level one do you think is there that shouldn't be there anymore?
When I took it, and I don't know, maybe this has changed since I've re-upped the zone diet being taught as the starting diet point was kind of the education. And the first time I took it, it was the paleo diet. So I think personally, I'm just not really it's probably for a general population person, a good framework for getting into weighing and measuring and having balanced food intake. So I'm not saying I don't think the zone diet is good, but CrossFit as a market is a very high intensity, very focused, very physically active group of people. And I think that what that ends up doing for a lot of people is underfeeding them while they're doing very, very high performance training. And I don't think that over the long term is a great idea for, and that's just an example. Another example would be the med ball squat clean being one of the foundational movements for the sport or for the methodology. And I've never seen even the elite level four seminar coaches use that as an example. And I don't think it's an appropriate tool to teach the squat clean versus a PVC pipe or a broomstick or something, because the movement is different. The center of gravity of the ball is different. So those are just two examples. I don't think it means that I think the education is not good, because I think it's a good starting point for people to understand what this whole movement is all about. But those would just be two areas that I'm just like, I don't agree with this. I don't think it should be a foundational movement if it's never been tested in the sport. Most people are not actively using it. If it was a true foundation of developing this, then I think you poll 90% of people and say, hey, are you doing this movement? People would say yes. I look at it as this like ancillary small teaching thing that is in there.
Yeah. I agree with that. No, I did my level one recently. I liked doing the med ball cleans because I was like, oh, I've never done this before. But then that probably speaks to your point. And it was like, I enjoyed the challenge of it. And the fact that I was in a hoop after that, because you were just at the bottom of a fucking squat for so long when they were going around telling everyone to do different things. I will say on the diet thing, in mine, this might be just unique to the one that I did, but in mine, they asked what different kind of ways of eating are you aware of or whatever. And people were like, oh, paleo. And they're like, yeah, paleo like, you know, that's what this is what that is. And like, it was literally like a one liner. And then someone else said, I can't remember. Someone else said something else. And then I said meat and fruit. She goes, what's that? And I was like, it's just meat and fruit. And then she's like, yeah, you can do that too. And then someone else said zone. Maybe I said zone. And then I think I said block. That was it. And she said, oh yeah, zone diet. And then she did go into a little bit more, but again, it was just kind of like a summary of what it is. But their thing was the first step is to guide people towards the external aisles of a supermarket or a, you know, a store or whatever, grocery store. Yeah. And like, yeah, you know, to push like fresh whole food, basically. That was what I walked away from it thinking. I didn't walk away from thinking, shit, I need to revisit that zone diet. I walked away from it thinking like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like whole foods. Yeah. No, they were like, just avoid ingredients lists, basically, was their advice. But they did explain what a block is, and they did explain, you know, that it is the way it sounded to me, the way that they were talking about it was, this is something that CrossFit has previously advised as a great tool, and it can be a great tool. And then they kind of moved on. They weren't like, you need to do this, or, you know, you should be advising people to do this.
Yeah, maybe it was different. I don't think I'd have any contention. Like, you know, the quote, I don't remember the exact thing, but eat meat, vegetables, nuts, seeds, the only thing I disagree in that with is it says no sugar. And I feel like there's no one eating, or very few people that are eating no sugar. And even like at my level one, there was barbecue that was brought that obviously had sugar in it. And I think there are little things like that, that I think, again, if you told me to critique and nitpick, are there areas of this that you disagree with? I would say yes. And I would point to those things, but at a net level, if somebody was doing what you're saying and eating in the outside of the aisles of the grocery store, even if I did that all the time and I stopped having cookies some nights, I'd probably be slightly more high physical capacity.
Yeah. Bart has actually nailed it. If you look at the nutrition label, if you don't look at the nutrition label, it doesn't have it. So if you just don't look at the label, it doesn't have a label. So it's fine. We're like Pop-Tarts. If you don't look at the label.
Do they just pop up?
No, if I hover over the chat, it says like show, and then I can pull up if I click. So I've never done one. Whereas Augustus does it once or twice a week.
I got proven wrong. Augustus.
Did someone just bring food to their level one, or did they supply food?
They brought food or supplied food.
They fucking knew you were. They were like shit max at this one.
No, it was at, mine was at Mayhem, and it was during the open. So maybe it was just, it was like a local place that CrossFit Mayhem ate at and had a relationship with. It was great food. I loved it and was happy that it was there, but slightly contradictory knowing that there's like this clear big line in one of the big tag phrases of it where maybe it could get changed to say, eat sugar in moderation relative to your physical output.
eat sugar in mayhem. sugar. Don't eat sugar outside your level one. Another thing I wanted to ask you then. So recently, Noah is someone who you would have historically been, you know, like joined at the hip with. You like in a similar way to Travis, you like always work together. More a seasonal in person. Like Travis is always there and you're always with Travis, but Noah would kind of come and go at different stages of the season and stuff. I get the impression that that's like just not going to happen this year, that Krieger are doing, they're in charge of the team programming and stuff, and they're coaching them all. And I know like you're on good terms with them and stuff. I'm not implying that. Or at least you both have said it online that you are. Is it weird on two levels? So is it weird releasing, like saying goodbye to someone like Noah, who's like, it's like 10 plus years, you know, working together quite intensely. And then to be like, all right, cool. Like best of luck, buddy. See ya. Is that weird? And is it weird? Like, have you found yourself with like spare time or, you know, like time that would have been dedicated to him, communicating with him and doing stuff for him. And now you're like, oh shit. Like, what do I do now with that hour that I usually block off to call him about whatever, like weekly?
Yeah, it's definitely weird. I've been through it before with athletes that I've coached for a very long time and had close relationships with. So I was used to it. And it actually was, I think it was more uncomfortable of a transition for him. Because when I first heard about the whole situation that he was building a team and that Tola and Matilda and Lena were going to be the three people, they were all coached by Krieger. And I know of Krieger and I know of Kristen Halty, and obviously they've done a great job with multiple teams. And I was the first person to tell Noah, I think you should let them coach you individually, because it is a nightmare of an experience to be coaching one person while the other three people are on a cohesive structure with a cohesive voice. I was like, if you really want to win, it really makes sense to cut ties with me. Noah fought me on that originally, and there was this whole process of trying to define if it was going to be a peak team or a TTT team and how it was going to work. And ultimately, he got to the same thought in that it would be better for him to stay at peak and for Krieger to do all the coaching. And I've done some consulting with Joachim, who is the head of Krieger, and I respect them and I respect their knowledge base and the way they coach. And he's obviously super well educated and experienced. So it was a easy thing for me to trust, like, hey, you're in good hands. Time wise, I guess I have a little bit more free time from not having to handle Noah, but I have other athletes now and, you know, projects and educational stuff. So it more feels like you're missing a limb or something. Like every once in a while in the open, I would see his name pop up on the leaderboard and be like, oh, you know, how'd it go? Or he'd send me the videos. And it's weird because I used to have so much more like emotional investment in the moment. Like, hey, what's your pace? What are you going to do? What's your strategy? What's your plan? And now it's kind of just like, hey, here's my video. I crushed it. Love you. And that's just like, it's just different. But not too bad.
Was there a plan or talk of a plan then initially of the four of them coming to you and like that the team would move to you?
Not to move to me. They were always planning on staying at peak, but there was originally Noah was saying that potentially they'd come up to Training Think Tank and do the quarterfinals the same way that he did. Like he would train at peak other than 2018 and one other year he moved up and trained at TTT for the whole season, but every other year he would train at peak and then just come up for quarterfinals or come up for the open or come up for the 2020 games. And we just decided, or they decided as a team, not we, because I wasn't involved in the actual decision, that just wouldn't make sense. They just decided stay there, limit travel. They're going to have to travel to the games and semifinals, so they didn't want to add extra trips.
That's fair. Is it you two obviously trust each other and stuff, but I'm curious on that kind of thing where you try something. So say he moves for a year in 2018, like for the full season, and then the next year says like, nah, I'm not going to do that this year. Like, is it an awkward conversation, or is it just like, is it mutually accepted that like, oh, that probably didn't yield what we thought it would, or let's like, okay, we've tried that, let's move on? Or is it like, hey, listen, man, I'm really sorry, but that didn't work. I'm going to move back. But or is there, when a decision like that is being reached, is there a nervousness of like, oh shit, like what if he's thinking, okay, that didn't work and fuck you, I'm out. Like, I'm going to go somewhere else altogether.
Yeah. Well, it never didn't work. More so, I think you realize over time that there's like a phase and a process at all times that you're going through of trying to get better. And when he came up the first time, it went really well. He had a great season, but Noah is from Miami. He was like born and bred in the CrossFit space inside of Peak. Guido, who owns Peak, is like an older brother and mentor to him. He gets free reign in that gym to do whatever he wants and kind of be the star of the show, whereas TTT is more of a community-oriented, lots of athletes training, more structured timelines. The dog couldn't be at the gym. So those are just open conversations. Like, okay, we learned a lot. We learned about professionalism, of structure, schedule, the intensity of training on a daily basis, getting PT whenever it was needed. But at every stage, the plan was to move back home And then when we would come up to the next year, we'd be like, okay, does it make sense to come up or do you just plan trips? And we would just basically build the year. It was never like a firm decision. And by the time we kind of got later into our individual journey with him, I don't think I care now if athletes leave or if somebody that I care about that is trusting me with their coaching says, hey, you're not the right fit for me anymore and I want to go somewhere else, I want them to go do that. I don't want them to be in a relationship with me trying to get them better if they don't think it's going to get them better as fast as they can do. So I don't think there was any fear on my part of him being like, oh, you guys suck and I'm out now.
Do you do like exit interviews? If someone does say that they're leaving, like, do you sit down and say like, why? Or like, you know, do you try and reflect on it? Or do you just say, okay, cool.
It depends, I think, on the person. I think almost all of them have been conversations. And sometimes I've been the person that has had to let clients go or athletes go or tell people that we're not a good fit. I think it's just very individual. Sometimes people will just, like, I've done initial consults with people, had a long conversation, sent them initial testing, and then just never heard from them ever again. They paid their consult, paid their first month. And after a week or two, I just would tell John, hey, cancel their membership. I don't know what's going on with this person. So I think it's very dependent on just the situation.
Have you ever talked about longevity with Travis, like how long he plans on competing for or how... You know, like, I feel like he's maybe entering the autumn of his career, maybe.
It's going to be a Travis Mayer question. I can't answer that. But we have talked about it a lot. And we've had those talks for, I think, many, many years, probably. Not like, hey, when are you going to put it up? But that there needs to be this thought about the transitional process. Because everybody who is an athlete eventually becomes not a professional athlete. And he's at the age with four kids that, we know that autumn time is coming. So we talk about it, but I think that'll be for him to talk about publicly.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm more so curious on like, what do you do if he just hypothetically, he goes like, okay, this is my last year. Do you stay where you are? Do you go like, all right, Travis, we'll leave you alone and we'll move. Like we'll go somewhere else. Or is this home? Like, is this a permanent residence that you intend on remaining in?
The space that we're in?
Yeah.
Actual physical space? No, it's definitely not. But I don't think
is a Travis Mayer dependent? Do you know what I mean?
No, it isn't. But we are working on trying to figure out how to integrate Travis into TTT, because I think obviously he's been an athlete for a really long time, but kind of the structure of what happened was he owned this gym that had a lot of extra space that wasn't being used. It was very early days for me and he was my only athlete at the time. So it was, okay, I'm going to move out there. I'm going to start this digital coaching education business. You're going to have this in-person gym. And then, you know, 9 years later, things have evolved and morphed. And now he's a 9-time games athlete or 8-time, and we have this business and we have this group of people in person, but the business infrastructure at the time wasn't set up for us to be cohesive. So now we're kind of just working through, okay, how do we, when we go through this transition or if we go to a new space, kind of like, what does that process look like?
Was it unusual knowing last year when Noah was at the games that it was his last year competing as an individual? Did that make it easier or more difficult? Stop reading the comments, Max.
How do you know I was doing that? My eyes are here. That's better than me like reading a text message. I'm still engaged. But the question was, how was it weird with Noah in the final year?
Yeah, like did it make it easier or did it make it more difficult knowing that that was it? Like as in that he had announced, oh, this is my final year as an individual and after this I'm finished. Does it release the pressure? Does it make more pressure laden because now it's like, oh shit, like he needs to perform because it's his last year, or I need to really make him enjoy it. Like I don't want it to be shit for him, or you know, I don't want to push him too hard, but I need to push him hard enough or whatever.
I mean, if I'm being frank, I had a very hard time. It was really in our last two seasons together working with each other because I love Noah, and he has added so much to my life as a human, and I learned so much, and he improved my market respect and all of that. But I'm also maybe a little bit less so now, but definitely while we're still working together, in the end, just wildly competitive. So if I'm working with people and they say, I want to win, then I get fired up and then I get more invested in the process. And then I write structures and progressions and hold people accountable to that standard that I think is required to be great. But Noah, and I don't think I'm saying anything people don't know, he publicly said that, oh, this is going to be my 10th year. Once I make it, there's no expectation, pressure, this, that. And I don't operate well like that. I am not good necessarily. And maybe I'm learning how to do so as I get older, at just being along for the ride or having fun. I like to have a purpose, a mission, a place. And Noah's training at that time was less oriented at progress and development and more oriented at keeping him healthy and not stressing him out so he can enjoy it. And that was very hard for me, because it's hard to go into a, okay, I'm going to go into this creative mode of trying to lay out the training week, but I can't put this in because it's too hard and he doesn't want to do this. So it brought a little bit of the joy of the process out for me. But I don't know, I guess in some ways it did relieve the pressure on game day, because when things weren't going as well, like he was in the, not the final heat, but the second to last heat, normally I would feel that, like, oh my God, did I mess his peak up, or was he not fit enough, or did I do something wrong? Where I didn't really have any of those feelings. So I guess it was like a double-edged sword, like some good, some bad. Mm. That might not be the right metaphor, but.
Yeah, no, well, it works. I really like Jake Berman. I've liked Jake Berman for a long time, and I have wanted him to go to the games for a long time, as I'm sure like you do as well. In comparison to other years, someone whose opinion I respect told me that this is the best that they've seen him. Would you agree with that? Would you say that he's in his best position to qualify this year?
Yeah, I think so. I haven't seen last year and the year before, I saw him training more at the facility. I've seen him do some stuff that was very, very impressive recently, but he splits training time at Perimeter, which is a little bit farther south than us. Sometimes he comes to the gym after I'm already back from the gym. So I don't know if I have my pulse on it as tightly as I normally would, but I think he's got a shot. But the East is going to be a hard competition for anybody to get through, I feel like.
So next, I actually need to pull this up, speaking of Jake. So next Wednesday, Colton was on my show yesterday, which I know you saw. And next Wednesday, Spin is not one to waste time or mince words. So next Wednesday at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific, Colton Mertens and Jake Berman, as far as I know, are doing 100 burpees over bar for time.
I love Do you feel left out when it's 7:30 Eastern and 4:30 Pacific, and those are all U.S. time zones, and you don't get a little European love?
No, I know the sandbox that I'm playing in. I know the sandbox that I'm playing in, and also it's funny as well, because I was talking to CTP about it when it was said. And I said, I tagged him in the read as well, and he was laughing at it. And he said, oh, you should, I said, hopefully Savan streams it. That was my initial thought. And then he said, oh, you should stream it, like it was said on your show. And I was like, it's probably the most like self-aware I've ever been. Of, I just said like, no. I was like, I mean, yeah, it would be cool, but like, there's just a better. Well, it's not even that. It's just like, it would be better for Jake and for Colton if they did it on Savans or Spins. Like, it would just be better for both of them to do it there. It would be amazing for me if they did it here. But like, again, I know the sandbox I'm playing in, and I know the spade that I have, or the shovel that I have, or whatever, or the bucket. It's not as nice as the other buckets. So it's like, I can make a sandcastle, but it's just going to be one of those straight, like,
one bucket.
Yeah, yeah. It's not going to have like a shell imprint or, you know, like little, you know, like what are they called? Turrets or whatever. It's just going to be like your basic bitch sandcastle. But like, I know that Spin will have John Young. He'll have Tyler Watkins. Heat One will do something with it undoubtedly. Like if he was on Savans, it'd have 6-7 experts talking about it at the same time. It'd be highly entertaining. Like I could do something, but I just feel like, and it was my like gut reaction when CTP was like, no, I mean, come on. It was, and I was like, no, like I could, but I just wouldn't, I just didn't feel like I'd do it justice. And it's like, yeah, I think sometimes you just need to know your role or know your place while trying to endeavor to improve. You still need to know like, okay, yeah, I could, but there's better people to do it. Speaking of CTP, the quality of output of YouTube and just social media stuff in general from Think Tank is fucking unbelievable. Like so good. Like the creativity, the like some of it is so asinine and like inane and stupid, and some of it's so highly entertaining, and some of it's like thought provoking, and some of it's, you know, really creative or whatever. Like the awards was somehow amazing and shit at the same time. Like it was just like it's incredible. The like, is that him? Is that, are they all his ideas? Are they all his, like, hey guys, we're going to do this? How does the create, like, does he just call you guys in and say, we're doing this tomorrow, wear a suit? Or how does that work?
Well, I would say he is the creative impulse, and I am a very high volume of idea person. So I have ideas of things that I will ping off of him. And then probably 80% of those ideas he will tell me are stupid and not do and not entertaining. Most of the gimmicky humor insertion, purposefully putting us messing our words up, all of that is him. And I have just learned over time that entertainment is less boring than my natural personality in general. Like if it were up to me, probably, and I were making all the content myself, it probably would have been more serious, more educational, less jokes, and more just like to the point stuff, and we probably wouldn't have a following. So he is the main creative driver in almost everything, but generally it's more of a group discussion, like me, Brandon, Mia, sometimes some other coaches as well will get in, Kyle Ruth, and we'll just brainstorm, hey, this is what we're going to do. And then he, once he gets the idea, he runs with it. So getting all of the like artistry of the awards behind and the like all of the making us put on jackets and coats, all of those were his ideas, and we just follow along, make ourselves
and then taking off his own jacket, which is because I think like I knew who he was, and I knew like Think Tank had a YouTube and stuff, and I knew who he was, and I met him kind of briefly in Madison, and I was in hindsight like laughably intimidated by him, because now that I know him, I'm like, he's like could not be less intimidating if he tried. But I saw the first video that I was like, oh shit, this is really good. Was, I'm not going to be able to find it, but you know the one where you guys did a trail run or something?
Rogue and the racing video.
Yeah, yeah. And I was just like, fuck, this is really, really high quality shit. And it had everything I wanted. It had like drama and like intrigue and like stupid reenactments of stuff that like made it, like that were pointless but hilarious.
Yeah, the pickle thing. I remember watching that, and I do have very serious aspirations with TTT and this underlying mission that I kind of took on to launch it. And sometimes I watch things like that and I'm like, oh my God. But I also love it at the same time. It's just nice to have fun and make people laugh and try to be entertaining, and then let him draw the line of, okay, how much education and serious shit and how much artistry and continuing to captivate an audience. But he's the guy. He's a phenom.
He's spelled the anus wrong here. Maybe bring that up with him. when Colton was saying that stuff last night, it's interesting because like,
someone asked me, was like, do you like, is Colton serious or like, what's like, you know? But I think when you know Colton, like, yeah, there's probably a grain of truth. There's probably a grain or like a sliver of like, fuck those guys. But like he said himself before the start, or before he said, before he went in his little like outburst, he said, in relation to something else, he said, oh, if someone asks you a question or if someone puts a microphone or a camera in front of you, say something of note and like be valuable. And like he is, Colton is one of the few people in the CrossFit space who genuinely makes such a fucking massive effort to be of use. Like he now with that outburst, right? That show that I did was terrible, right? So he saved that show with that outburst. He made a clippable moment that I clipped. He has now created several hours of content around that one outburst because now he got like Jake leaned in, he got involved. You, the think tank crowd got involved. Savan got involved. Spin is getting involved. Now it's going to make a show, a separate show out of it. There'll be spin-off content off that. Who knows what other things it'll lead to of people saying like, hey, Colton got a pretty decent amount of attention for saying that. I'm going to call my shot on fucking Isabel or whatever, and then like race such and such a person who claims they're the best at Isabel or whatever. So like the content space in around CrossFit in general, I think is like remarkably good. But people like him then doing stuff like that and having like, you know, fake annoyances or, you know, maybe real, but like I think fake, fake annoyances or whatever, is just adds such a, like it levels stuff up. And I think CTP falls into that bracket of someone who is constantly pushing shit forward through like innovation and like offering, like, okay, he, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, whatever, I was saying this to my wife. I said, like, I was watching back one of the TTT reacts of my show. And my wife was like, are you watching your own show? And I said, no, I'm watching Think Tank did a reacts to my show. And she was like, so you did a debate, and they're watching your debate and then doing a debate about your debate. And I said, no, they're not debating about my debate. They're answering the same questions. She's like, so they're just using your questions. She's like, that's kind of stupid. And I was like, no, it's actually really good. And she's like, you're happy they're doing it? And I'm like, yeah, it's really good they're doing it. And I was like, they have like 40,000 subscribers. If even like 1,000 of them see that and think, oh, that's an okay show, like that's good for me. And she's like, oh yeah, I never thought of it that way. But I think him in particular, and Savannah is similar, for Savannah's probably the leader of it, I guess, of that, like, finding unique and different ways to share what other people are doing and to push it forward and to bring it, like, to try and bring everyone along together and, like, push certain people into the spotlight and say, like, hey, look at what this person's doing or whatever. But I just, like, yeah, I wanted to make it a point to bring CTP up because he's a fucking legend. Like, the stuff that he does is remarkable. Like, that channel is unbelievable. And the variance in it, I'm glad to hear that it comes from him, that it's that it's his ridiculousness, because it's cool.
Yeah. The what's the correlation between Colton and Chris in that thing? Or you're just saying just, that?
It was just, kind of just stream of consciousness. But I feel like the correlation between the two of them is that at all costs, it's entertainment. So it's like Chris could just say like, hey, they're doing a debate show, we should do a debate show, because that's what I did, and just like rip it off and do it as his own thing. But he didn't. He was like, all right, this is like not as good for my own brand as it could be if I just said we're doing a debate show, but I'm still going to do it this way because it's entertaining for everyone and it's going to create additional content. And I think Colton's doing the same thing, where he's probably an outlier when it comes to athletes, maybe Dallin Pepper a bit as well, people who like aren't afraid to talk shit, whether it's comedic or genuine, and call their shot and then see what happens, see what shakes out. And if nothing shakes out, no harm, no foul. But now we've got potentially hours of content for a Think Tank, for a Spin, for Savan, for me, just off the back of taking what someone said and running with it.
Yeah, for sure.
It's cool. What would you do if he left? What would you do if CTP was like, hey, I'm going to go and like go on a yacht or something? Is there like, does he have understudies? Is there a shared approach to that, or is it all him? Like that, the actual.
Yeah, well, we have our second media person now, Frank, and he has done the educational stuff because he, me, and two of our coaches, Kyle Ruth and Kyle Habdo, have taken the lead role in building the education. So we built this kind of media flow, building the educational courses. And we thought, hey, if we're talking to coaches now and we don't have the need to go kind of mass market and try to be educational and be fun, and I really do think of it too, in some ways, as helping to promote and elevate the sport. Like, the sport is already kind of under-resourced and under-viewed, and getting more views and putting more stuff out there, I think, is good for the whole ecosystem. But from an educational perspective, we don't need to worry about a lot of that stuff. We can just make it more simple, more focused on me putting an idea and scheming it on a whiteboard and just talking to the camera or doing movement demos. So we have Frank as kind of a backup role, but I think if Chris ever left, the business would change pretty substantially in terms of its media ecosystem. On the inside, I don't think like the coaching infrastructure and the marketing infrastructure and all of that stuff would change dramatically, but I hope that's not a foreshadowing. Are you trying to get him over to Coffee Pods and Wads?
No, I can't afford him. I do think he's one good Pokemon card away from just retiring. There's another Augusta says we're doing 100 burpees over the bar for our gym's April challenge. I train a kilo. That's like Colton's local gym. So it's giving us a community event as well. Lazy CPW is so good. It is actually good. It's annoyingly good. Like, it's almost better than the actual show, some would argue. CTP content is so good. Wow, that looks like a yearbook photo, Courtney. Yeah,
okay. Shout out, Courtney.
with other athletes then, so you know, we talked about Travis and Noah. What about when Sarah left, when she because she joined and then left, and is like, when you see someone like her, someone who has a huge amount of potential and has had a frustrating period in the sport, I guess, or whatever, and comes, and then there's, I'm assuming there's a maybe a thought of like, oh, I can fix this, or like I can realize the potential, or have the potential be realized, or whatever. And then when that doesn't happen, like, does that hit you harder than if it's just an unknown athlete who comes and says, ah, I'm gonna go somewhere else, whatever, when it's someone who has the potential and who has been there and stuff?
Yeah, for sure. It definitely hurts. And it also hurts too, what people don't realize is that, or maybe they do realize, but when you work with people that have that high of a profile, you then get brought into that profile discussion and you get criticized or, you know, judged in the same way of what you contribute to that process. And so working with her meant interviews with Savan and getting out there and doing more talks about it. So there's the ego challenge to it. There's the personal challenge to it, because I actually really enjoyed that process of working with her and trying to get to the next level and get back from her ACL rehab quickly. So yeah, I mean, I think it hurts more in that capacity because you get very invested in those projects. Okay, you know, I'm pragmatic enough to know that, hey, if you go out there and you have this person that has a million plus followers and you make a major difference in their ability to execute, their quality of life, their happiness, their health, that there will be rewards that come to the whole community that I've been trying to build. So I took that responsibility on and put a lot of work into it and a lot of dinners and a lot of talks. And when it ends, it is abrupt and hard, but it's not like you can't get over it. And I think the experience of working with people over time, you realize it's just kind of part of the game. It's a coaching relationship isn't a marriage. They're all transient. So you have to get good at knowing when, like, hey, our time has come to an end, and hopefully I taught you well and that you look back on this and think it was valuable. And even if it wasn't a good fit, that reputation and all of that stuff stays good in the coaching space. That's kind of just how I look at it, or maybe how I coped with the disappointment.
I had Perrin on recently, well, recently-ish, and she explained when she was on about how she kind of wound up working with you and working with Think Tank and stuff. What do you look for in a coach? Like, what is it? What did you see in her? What do you see in other coaches that, because I know she kind of did a, like an in-person seminar type situation. And then you obviously spotted something or thought like, oh, she could be good. Like, what is it that you see? Is it like the communication potential? Is it like interest? Is it that they've already bought in and you don't need to sell them on anything, that it's like the job is kind of done? Like, what are you looking for?
It's hard to put a singular thing to it. She went through a mentorship program, and the first most obvious thing is just the ability to follow through and do your work. Like in the mentorship program, there's sample movement screens, there's homework, there's people having to go and do voice projection drills. And all of this stuff is just uncomfortable hours throughout the week of reading, writing, doing things that are part of education. And you'd be surprised how many people pay a pretty good amount of money and then just don't follow through. So they kind of like easily filter themselves out. So I think that's probably number one, is that people do their work. They get their programs done on time. They are invested. Parents specifically had a ton of experience herself as an athlete with other pretty high level athletes. We had really good one-on-one mentorship talks and just kind of vibed in how we thought about physical development. And I think there's a combination of things that are emotional, like how you feel when you talk to somebody. Can I work with this person and enjoy working with them? There's intellectual things of, are they smart enough to... CrossFit is very complex in that there are a lot of things you have to get athletes better at, especially at the higher levels. There are ways that if somebody is very talented enough, and to be honest, I think most athletes should try not to overthink things. And it's kind of a coach's job to try to simplify for the athlete. But I personally am of the belief system that I'd rather have intellectually minded coaches that are searching for those answers. And she's very intellectually curious. And then the others just like pragmatic, logical things. Like she was willing to move down and she was all hands on deck in the on-site environment. So those are kind of the big picture things that I look at without really having a checklist that I go through. It's kind of it feels right. And when I think about it, it seems like it's the right decision. So I want to bring them into the team.
Hmm. Do you find it hard when there's someone like Alexis or someone who's around who's working with a different coach, primarily, not to over insert yourself or not to like overstep? Or is that possible? Is it like, do you know what I mean? As in not to be like, I don't know, that not to let like a control freak kind of mindset take over and be like, no, I need to do it this way.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I have 100% in that example, I have 100% trust in Adam. So
yeah.
Really try to insert myself, and we're very different people and we're very different coaches. My programs are generally more aggressive and I take more risks with athletes and I plan failure into training a little bit more often. And I think he is more conservative and step-by-step. And I think both approaches can work with different athletes. And with Alexis, I think that he's a perfect coach for her. And I don't think I would be, if I'm being honest, just based on our dispositions. So it's very easy for me to be friends with Alexis. And hey, if I see something, I say something, or if her mood is down, I might say something to try to lift her up. But it's very easy for me to not insert myself because I lead with trust. And if somebody's part of the team and they're in charge of that, then I kind of stay out of it. So I don't think it's hard. I think it's maybe in the earlier days, I had more to prove and I couldn't do what I wanted as an athlete. And then I thought as a coach that I would be able to use my brain and my emotions and creating culture to validate that I was the best and that I was good and I was worthy, which probably ties into my own insecurities and shit I was working through as a younger man. But now it's much easier not to have those ego things because I don't worry about it as much. And I want, like, I took a lot of pride and success in Adam having an athlete that took top 10 in the world because I've had a lot of time with Adam, and I coached Adam, and I taught and oversaw his earlier programs, and he's seen how I've created the competitive environment, probably tick things that he didn't like and threw them away and built his own structure. So seeing it made me feel good about not just being like a one-hit wonder. Like my brand wasn't just built on Travis or just built on Noah, that it's a replicatable thing that systems of communication and coaching and progression can work for different coaches and different athletes. And it's not just my influence. So I think it's become more easy to relinquish control because I have good people and things have gone well in those realms.
Hmm. Do you think, have you got a shelf life as a elite level, an elite athlete coach? As in like, have you, like say when Travis retires, would you be like, I'm out too? Like, have you thought about your end date?
Yeah, I have. I don't really have I want to coach for the rest of my life because I'm very passionate about coaching in general. Recently, I have had more opportunities to work with athletes in other sports that are pursuing other things. And I love that challenge. Like I love golf as an example. And I worked with Blaine Barber, who was trying to make it from the Corn Ferry Tour back to the PGA Tour he was trying to make his fifth year so he could get a pension through the PGA Tour. And I worked with him in that final season and it was super enjoyable and it was new. And the structure of competition is more like, it's easier to say, hey, we got your swing speed better. And this was something that we were working on. And CrossFit is very hard to know that you're getting people better. And the season has a lot of different traveling times. And I have definitely felt the pull to do other things, but I also have some very young, talented, up and coming athletes that I will at least see through, which means that I could be in the game for whatever, another decade, if they're just getting started and they have super long careers. But I'm sure it'll change over time. You know, I have assistant coaches, I have on-site coaches. So probably the days of me obsessing over a singular athlete, or like when I was working with Travis or Noah, they probably got 80% of my time between the two of them coaching wise. And that's probably already dead. I've already been like, okay, I can allocate X amount of time and be fully focused, but I can't give all of my focus to one thing because I gotta do the education and I'm still in the content and I'm still working on trying to figure out the business and how to make it operate well. And there's just too many things for me to be only a coach.
Yeah, that's fair. All right. Well, thank you for coming on. I'm trying to work out if this, like, do the dots.
Yeah, does the dots mean it was shitty?
Yeah, the dots imply sarcasm to me, but maybe that's not the intention. But
it's like a very non-interesting interview.
Yeah, I think like dots before that or dots after that are like, are you actually saying what you are typing here? Wazami, how much to get mint on your bottom banner? Bottom banner. Oh, on the bottom of the screen. $5. Fuck.
That's
off.
It. I'm in. I want you to put mine right over. Actually, I don't know. I like everyone. Who's Sentinel training?
Taylor Self.
Oh, okay.
It was self made and then he got sued.
For real?
Yeah, he couldn't use his own name because it was copyright infringement on someone had like self-made training center or self-made. It was like in a gym in New York or something. And it was like, you're profiting off the back of my brand. And Taylor was like, it's my fucking name. It's like, it's literally my name. But yeah, the guy was like, oh, you've got 90 days or whatever. So they had to pick a new name. But Sentinel is good. I like it. So thanks for coming on. It's great to catch up. I really enjoyed your company. You're an interesting guy to talk to. And there's, you know, some other rocks there that we could probably turn over. But, you know, life moves on and time moves on. Waits for no man. So thanks. Thanks to everybody in the comments as well, watching and, you know, engaging and shit. If you all liked the video, this is what, 122 of you. If you liked the video, that's great, because it pushes it in people's algorithm. And if you subscribe as well, and then you can watch next week, next Wednesday, Max's own
Jake Berman or Jake German, the German. He actually kind of looks German. He kind of looks like a bad, especially when his hair was bleached. He kind of looks like a bad, like a villain.
A villain
in a bomb movie or something.
I can see that.
He doesn't talk, and his only skill is he just like fucks soda cans at people. Like that's his. He's like Odd Job, but with a soda can instead of a hat. He just like fires
throws spades at people.
Yeah, he's just constantly drinking. Yeah. That's how you know he's in the room. You just hear "shh" in the background. Yeah. You're like, oh shit, he's here. Yeah. Berman, the German.
I'm a very loyal guy, and Jake's been around TTT for a while, so I'm gonna put my money on Jake. But also, Colton is really freaking fast at burpees, so that's gonna be a good race.
What time do you think that would be? Like 3:40, 3:30?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
It's crazy because I did 100 normal burpees. Although they're on paper maybe slower than over the bar because you kind of have to stand up and stuff.
It depends on how much you jump and like how vertical you get, I think.
Yeah, I did 100 and it was like, I think it was like 6 minutes something. So it's like double the amount of time. And that was like, I was fucked for about 2 days after that. But yeah, Colton by 20 seconds. I don't know. It's going to be tight. It'll be interesting.